This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
You're listening to Iman Rakerti
on Power 98.7.
We are now at 25 minutes to 12 o'clock, and we've got two segments in this half hour, although I suspect that our conversation is going to run over a little bit. Tapiso Ramachewa is with me. I hope I've pronounced that correctly. Ramatewa, okay, is with me, and she's from the One Young World Foundation, and she's a life coach. We're going to talk about the One Young World Summit, which brings together some of the world's brightest young leaders. It took place in the Netherlands at The Hague, just towards the latter end of October, the 17th to the 20th, and 1,800 young leaders from around the world were there. You would know some of them. Akon is a famous artist that we all know. One of our very own, who used to be until very recently with Greenpeace, Kumi Naidoo, is now based in London. And by the looks and sounds of it, Tapiso, it sounds like an absolutely amazing platform, especially for young people to know their agency and learn how to activate that agency in the broad work, in the network of a broader global society.
Definitely. I mean, it's a really powerful global leadership platform that brings really dynamic young people who care about all sorts of different issues. So from the environment to food security to business to governance to really looking at the refugee crisis that we have currently. And these are young people who are literally changing the world. And what makes it awesome is there really is a push towards impact and us becoming active global citizens who come up with solutions and not just talk about the problems that we see in our respective countries.
So you were there, and I'm wondering who else from South Africa was represented and what our input was from our perspective, because as you say, you know, each country will be grappling with its own home and domestic problems. Yep. In some countries, it could be living under the threat of civil war. In other countries, it is high levels of migration, which are precipitated by really poor economic conditions in that country. Others could be dictators. I mean, it could be a litany of different things. South Africa is also in a very special and unique kind of place, as we're trying to recover from our past. Mm. We are dealing with issues of identity, but we're dealing with real coalface issues around gender-based violence, crime, education. What is our future?
So one of the co-founders of One Young World is actually a South African woman, Kate Robertson, and Thuli Madonsela was also there, which is always amazing to see her. And I got a chance to speak to her about just where we are as a country and why she thinks young people need to be spearheading the change in our country. And it's exactly what you're saying. If you look at the continent, we have a continent where over 80% of our population is under the age of 35. And that creates a massive youth bulge for us. And when you look at the level of education in our country in particular, where young people aren't given the resources and the tools to be able to actually go out and study further and have opportunities, that then has an impact on the level of crime. You look at the stats around youth unemployment.
Does it? I mean, has that link been firmly established?
Yes. You know, in the conversations that we've been having, it really is about realizing that it's not enough for a select few to make it out, because we're all going to be impacted by the cascading effect of the lack of opportunities in our country.
You know what I'm struck by? I mean, we talk about our 4.0, the Industrial Revolution. I'm just making it short because it sounds too long to say the whole thing. We evaluate where we are in terms of our own preparation of our 4.0. Are we creating and nurturing or incubating the kinds of skills that we need to meet the economy of the future? And we have all of these really fascinating discussions where we're really good at diagnosing our ills and what the good medicine is going to be to address it. And yet, that kind of seems to be where it stops, because if the message is strong enough, if the conventional wisdom has been established well enough and is credible, why is it not having an impact on how our education policies are structured, on how what we are teaching children in schools changes? So at what point does the One Young World Summit become not only a diagnostic device, platform, opportunity, but really begins to impact how policy is written and drawn? which is where the real impact is going to be.
Absolutely. One Young World really supports us in being able to create projects or impacts in our various spaces of influence. So, for example, I work a lot with different corporate organizations, and it really is about looking at whether or not corporate citizens in our country are doing enough to invest and doing enough to really empower young people. You get a lot of leaders who complain that young people come into the world of work and they have ridiculous expectations, which is true. But
well, what are those ridiculous expectations?
So because I have a degree, I need to be earning 30,000 rand a month, and I need to have a corner office, and I need to be fast-tracked in 5 years of starting my career. And the problem is that there's this gap. And for me, I call it, you know, the generational divide, where we are living in a completely different world. I was with one of the top five law firms 2 weeks ago discussing the issues around hierarchy and young talent, where they don't respect hierarchy. If things suck and I see the CEO in the lift, why can't I just say, listen, this doesn't work for me? And they have an issue with that. But the whole thing is that I can tweet Beyonce and she can tweet me back, but I can't speak to the CEO when I see him in the canteen. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, it was really interesting to see, you know, how the older generation sees their rise in terms of the corporate and building their careers. But the way we see it is very different. And there needs to be some sort of dialogue and preparation that happens so that when I do get to a corporate institution, I don't have these lofty ideas about, you know, how much access I have, but also what the expectations are, because I feel like those are not made clear as well.
It's so rich what you're saying, and I think we can leapfrog over this, and we shouldn't, because it's an important nuance that I think we need to deal with and just look at it a little bit closer. When you talk about the generational divide and how young people who are, let's take for example the corporate space, feel like accessibility shouldn't be an obstacle to being able to say something directly from a junior employee to a CEO. The kind of world that they've been shaped into and shaped out of is very different to the kind of world that the CEOs who might be older today were shaped in and shaped out of. And I think that is a really important dynamic to explore.
Yeah.
How do we do that?
I think it's just about acknowledging that we are the most technologically connected generation of all time. And we're also the most globally connected generation of all time. So that changes how our perspective and our worldview and what we think is possible. So when it comes to creating solutions for business, we don't understand why we don't have a seat at the table. But if you look at how business is run traditionally, the executive goes off and has a boss board, and they come back and they say, this is the vision of the business. Why were we not part of actually creating that vision for the business? And it's exactly the same with our country. If you look at the Dinuking scenarios, so often I ask people if they know about the Dinuking scenarios, and the Dinuking scenarios were created in 2009, and it looked at the future of our country, and it looked at the, you know, crime and the impact that crime is going to have on us as society.
It's kind of futurescaping our country if things didn't change in these
Absolutely.
Various areas.
And so few people even know about the report. And I mean, they were forecasting South Africa in 2020. And it's insane that we're sitting in 2018. I mean, it's already the end of the year. And we're this close to 2020, but people still, A, don't know about it, but B, we haven't necessarily integrated it in the way that we engage with each other, whether it's civil society or business or religious institutions. We're just so disconnected that we don't have we're not aligned in terms of our vision for our country and where everybody fits in terms of executing that vision. The National Development Plan. Do people even know what it is? Because civil society also has a role to play in us actually realizing that national development plan. But it's like, you know, these leadership sort of pockets are for government and for executives.
You know, out of the boss parade scenario of where, you know, a group of select individuals would go away and they would come up for a template for the country. Basically, that strikes me as being how policy then would be created. It's a type of boss parade that cabinet has, and then they decide on a course of action which is then shared with the rest of the citizenry. Could it be through the budget address or through the State of the Nation address? And then, you know, everyone is meant to implement. it's not as cognizant of the fact of what you've just alluded to, that our society, especially in the way this the younger generation is interacting with information and power structures, is seeking and is hungry for a more collaborative forum to be able to caucus ideas, to be able to share, because in major part, as you say, through that statute you told us about in the beginning, young people are the ones who are mostly left out and marginalized in this economy. Young people are the demographic that have been mostly less catered to, especially as we project towards 2030, 2050, where they're going to be the ones in charge.
Absolutely.
So we can get ahead of the curve if we begin to break down the rigidity of our consultative structures. Absolutely. And how we formulate policy and become more collaborative. But on a practical level, how is it possible?
Intergenerational leadership development is key. And as a coach, I see how, you know, coaching is for select individuals in a particular tax bracket that can afford it. But when you look at the tools and the resources that coaching offers, it's something that everybody needs. You know, I mentor kids, grade 8 kids in Tembisa, and I look at how just being able to have those tools and being able to speak the same language as their teachers, because they're also on the mentorship program, changes the dynamic of their relationship and their engagement as well. Because they're...
It's less hierarchical?
Absolutely.
And more linear?
Yes. Because they're able to have dialogue and they're both empowered and they have the same tools and they have the same language and are able to then communicate the challenges and the, you know, potential solutions around certain issues that they're experiencing.
So, you know, what's been interesting about attempts in the past, and also I think in a far more accelerated way, attempts by this president, is to create spaces where there is more talk back and more engagement. If I look just at the last couple of months alone, besides the commissions of inquiry, we look at even yesterday's agenda summit, which was born out of the total shutdown movement. And that was just like, you know, a couple of weeks ago. And then this was galvanized into action as a platform to hear specific complaints in our society. So it has been, you get the sense that there's more talking going on and more, at least more of an attempt to reach out and be connected. What would be that space for young people to talk back to government about policy regression or ways in which they're being marginalized in our economy, or ways in which to get some of that moolah that was, you know, kind of handed around at the investment summit into their own hands so that they have the keys, you know, to their own pathways?
Absolutely. I think it's really opening the channels of communication up, because it also still feels like you need to be politically connected to be able to get someone's ear. And that's unfortunate, because you get so many young people that are already doing such great work in, you know, various communities and various spaces of interest, but they don't have access to people that can actually help them scale their projects. And that's what we need. We need access to people. We need people that are actually interested in listening. Because another thing is, you know, we can talk all day, but at the end of the day, what impact are we actually having? And for me, that's the most important thing. And for One Young World, it really is about us becoming change agents. It's not just about being at The Hague and being at the Netherlands. It's about coming back home.
It's a nice trip.
Absolutely.
And buying snakeskin tops. That. So this is so funny. My listeners don't know. So Tabiso walks in and she has this, obviously, and I'm a hugger and she clearly is a hugger too. So we reach out towards each other. And then I notice the snakeskin top. And everyone who knows me knows that I have a terrible, debilitating fear of snakes or anything snaky. So I just, like, my hug was frozen sort of mid-hug, and I just ended up giving her a kiss on the cheek. Completely useless information. But anyway, so you're there at The Hague.
Absolutely. And it really is about coming back home and sharing our experience. We have, I mean, the South African ambassadors are amazing. And if you listen to the projects that they're involved in, it's so inspiring
to
know.
What are they doing? Because we think they go to countries and they chill there and, you know, eat the foreign cuisine and that's it.
We have ambassadors that are you know, have projects in the recycling space. We have some ambassadors from Unilever, and Unilever's given them a platform to be able to actually come up with solutions around recycling plastic. And it's part of the commitment to the global sustainable development goals. We have ambassadors who are in the drug rehabilitation space and looking at really supporting young people to get the skills and the resources they need to be able to, you know, beat their addictions and recreate their lives. You have ambassadors who are in the education space, who tutor young people and really take the time out. And I think for me, it's really inspiring to see young people who are sacrificing time. They have 9 to 5s, but they still make the time to impact societies, impact their communities, go back to the communities that they come from, and start projects that are really inspiring and just shifting the narrative around certain issues.
I would like to understand from your perspective how more young people can be involved in the One World Summit, or even the One World, the One Young World project itself. You know, when I was at school, the only reason I had access to anything that was outside of my own township life was because I had an interested history teacher who would, on his own time, find out about programs where young people could get together, where you could interact, even across racial lines, in inverted commas, even though we were all part of the black community, there was a very clear wall of separation between so-called colored, Indian, and black communities and kids at school. And he created those pathways for us, or a debating team, or whatever the case may be. Kids will hear this, or young people will hear this, and feel so left out. Like, I didn't even know this existed. How do I become a part of it? I'm doing some really great work. Could be in Soweto, in Eldorado Park, in Asia, wherever the case may be. How do I begin to get heard? How do I begin to have access?
Fortunately, we're lucky enough to have social media, an amazing platform that connects people all over the world. And I think that is definitely the easiest place for people to really get in touch with us and join the One Young World community. And I encourage, you know, corporate citizens and leaders to also get involved in One Young World. When I looked at the partners, we didn't have any South African businesses on there, and it was a bit disappointing because we had amazing, we had Kumi Naidu, Thuli Madonsela, Kate, massive South African delegation, but no South African businesses, no South African corporate leaders on the panel talking about what they are doing in our country.
Was that an omission, an oversight, or were they invited?
So what happens is they send delegates, which is amazing because it's not cheap, but we actually need the business leaders. They are the people with the muscle. We need to know that they not only just, you know, sending us to the summit, but they also committed to the changes that we want to bring back home.
So what are you doing now that you're back home? Now that you've had this amazing global interaction, and I imagine these young people would be hugely inspired, because any kind of interaction that took me out of my comfort zone was massively kind of boundary shifting and even horizon shifting. So what have you brought back? What are you going to do next?
So we're really, you know, collaboratively intelligent. I think that's one thing that One Young World really has taught us to be. And we're collaborating on various projects, especially around the environment. We're looking at how to support corporate citizens around one use, you know, using straws, using different, you know, plastic, and support. We actually came up with a petition for one of the airlines that we flew back home with, because we looked at the just how much plastic that they use, and we started that petition as well. But we're really collaborating. I mean, we're meeting on Saturday and looking at how we can support each other and different projects. I'm working with a guy called Tabo. He works for PPS in developing platforms for young people to become more financially savvy. And these are just projects that we're creating ourselves. We don't have funding, but because we're really passionate about it and we have talent.
That's what disturbs me, is that passion never meets funding. It's very sad. Yes. I hope that you get lots of that. For people who are interested in what you're sharing with us, would love their children or people that they know to get involved and really to kind of mobilize support for the initiative that you've set for yourself, how do they get in touch?
You can get in touch with me. You can email me. My email address is tepi@liquid.co.za.
tepi@liquid.co.za. You on Twitter?
I am on Twitter, TSH_EPI. You can tweet me if you have projects that you need support with, if you're interested about getting One Young World to sponsor you, because we also have sponsorships available.
Sponsorships available, everybody.
Yes.
Holla. And TSE underscore
TSH underscore EPI. Yes,
so that's on Twitter. That's and on Twitter. The email again,
Tepi@liquid.co.za.
Tepi@liquid.co.za. Get involved, guys. And there you can also benefit, I think, from the work that you've done, the experience that you've managed to accrue, some of the research that you have.
Definitely.
I think it is a great opportunity to collaborate. That's our new buzzword. Thanks to Tsepiso Ramotsehwa. With her beautiful snakeskin top. Thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate your time and good luck with all the work of the One Young World project.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.